Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Buckhead, Atlanta, it's time for Simply Buckhead Radio with your host, publisher, and founder, Joanne Hayes.
Good afternoon, Ryan. It's very exciting to be here on a sunny Tuesday afternoon, just before the start of April, and with Easter coming up this weekend, lots and lots going on. And of course, our friend Ludacris, his album dropped today, Ludiversal. So congratulations, Ludacris. Hope you're out there listening. Lots going on all over the place, though.
That's right. We're closing out March here, getting ready to go into April. Just had another exciting episode of Simply Buckhead Radio last week with the latest edition of the magazine and the new edition coming out next week. Is that right? Or 2 weeks?
Actually, no. New edition is coming out in May.
Oh, in May.
Working on it now.
Okay.
And I'm not going to spill any secrets here. As you know, we're not allowed to, but our cover is being shot this afternoon.
Okay.
So at a location to be announced later. But lots of fun with the new issue coming up. It's an art and antiques issue. The current issue has been absolutely stellar. Mm-hmm. The music issue, great stories about the musicians who give back to our community, has really struck a chord in the community. A lot of great feedback and posts on Instagram and Twitter. I've had to become kind of Instagram savvy this month, so it's been a great learning experience.
So for the listeners out there, if they have not picked it up,
yes,
go out there and get it.
Yes, we are publishing 24,000 copies per issue. We do 8 times a year. We distribute in 250 locations in the Buckhead and Brookhaven area, as well as the International Terminal at Hartsfield-Jackson and
nice.
5 of the private jet hangars at PDK.
Okay.
So we've got some great distribution. And on top of that, our entire magazine is viewable on our website, simplybuckhead.com. We're seeing over 37,000 hits a month, which is amazing for a regional magazine.
That is. That's outstanding.
Yeah. Very exciting. And I know you have some very exciting news of your own, starting
that's
your
right.
own show this Friday.
That's right.
Shameless Georgia, plug here.
Georgia Business Radio, hosted by yours truly, starting this Friday, inaugural episode, 11 a.m. You'll be able to catch that weekly starting in May, but we're going to do 2 episodes starting next month. So looking for business leaders, thought leaders out there in the community who want to come in and tell their story here at Georgia Business Radio. So look for that, radio listeners.
Terrific. I love that. We get to plug you too.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, on to our spectacular guest today. We are very excited about our 3 guests. And first up, we'd like to introduce Chris Domino. I'm sure our audience knows you, but we're going to get to know you even better today. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Look forward to it.
It'll be fun. We're going to talk about everything, sports, kids, Hawks, all kinds of fun stuff. So we'll get back to Chris. Our next guest today is Camille Kessler, and she's here representing the Atlanta Symphony Associates Decorators Show House.
It's a mouthful. Yes.
It's a mouthful. I'm glad I just got it all out correctly. So welcome to you today,
Thank
Camille.
Thank you.
And we're going to start our interviews today with Zeb Stevenson. And prior to the show, I was telling Zeb when he was at the Livingston, we'll talk a little bit about where he's been and where he is now, at Watershed. But he was one of the first chefs in Atlanta that I met about 5.5 years ago. And he was super kind to us. It was my first event ever that I had attended in Atlanta at Aquavino. At the Georgia Aquarium, and you were just super nice. We came up started talking to you, and you were very, very informative about your food and where you were, and it was really an honor to meet you.
Thanks
and I've
very
sort
much.
Of followed you as you've been in the city, so it's great to have you on the show today.
Thanks, it's great to be here.
Representing Watershed.
Representing Watershed on Peachtree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So your career, you've done a lot in a pretty short period of time.
Yeah, I've been busy. I don't sleep much.
And I see that you were a Cornell art major.
That's correct.
How do you get from art to food, although there's that creativity aspect of both?
I think it's a pretty natural progression, to be honest with you. my formal training is in painting. I've always been a very creative person. I'm fueled a little bit differently, I think, than some other people. I pursue things. I obsess over things. And those are the makings of a really good painter. And in the same token, those are the makings of a really good cook, too. So really, it's never felt like that much of a stretch for me to have gone from one discipline to the other. I fell in love with the restaurant business when I first started working in it. It felt dynamic and alive, unlike any other kind of work that I'd done before. So it really got me going. And so, gosh, it just feels... I feel like the luckiest guy in the world, honestly, because I get to wake up every morning and do something I really love.
That's the key. We talk about that a lot on this show because we're dealing with business leaders and folks in the community. And the recurring theme is always that we do what we do because we're passionate
Absolutely.
About it. And that's what makes us successful.
Yeah, that's what makes for as happy a life as we're going to have.
Yes. And you know? I love the Cornell connection. Okay, guys, you probably remember we've had two Cornell grads on the show that are also in the food industry. John Meadow from LDV Hospitality.
Really?
He was actually on the business side, but has had, you know, food around him his whole life, mm-hmm. too. As well as John Vandegrift, the operations manager for Shake Shack, who happens to live right here in Atlanta.
And it comes as a little surprise. I mean, the Statler School of Hotel and Restaurant Management at Cornell is one of the top, if not the top program mm-hmm. in its discipline anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Rhode Island, so we knew Johnson and Wales, right, Chris?
Oh, yeah.
We know Johnson and Wales from that area.
Yeah, I'm just impressed. The whole idea of sending an application to Cornell and watching that money just fly out the window. I'll just skip ahead. I do not have a Cornell education.
Neither do I. But we're having fun, so that's really important. But the rest of your Atlanta experience so far, and this is so far, and you know, I'm sure the best is yet to come.
Well, I certainly like to think so. I'm reasonably young and
well, definitely younger
energetic,
than me.
So.
Definitely younger than me. But you've had a lot of technical skills. I see with butchery, charcuterie, which one of my favorite pastry, sauce work. Mm-hmm. Then you helped as executive sous chef opening Spice Market.
Yeah.
And then you won the Food Network's Chopped cooking competition show.
You know, I have kind of mixed feelings about that experience because it's very stressful and mm-hmm. they do their best to get you out of your element and off your game, and they're really good at it. And for somebody like me who likes things to be very orderly and planned and kind of zipped up, that's it kind of gives me that feeling.
Yeah, but you rose to the occasion. You won it.
Yeah, I know. So, I don't know how still, but I did.
But I think isn't that the whole point? They're trying to make you perform at a level that's even something better and greater and different than you've ever done before.
Yeah, to really test your skills and creativity and your fundamental skills as a cook too.
I love that. Did you enter on your own or did somebody make you do it?
Somebody made me do
uh-huh.
it.
Uh-huh. That's what I figured you were going to say.
I didn't want to. I fought a little bit. But eventually I gave in, clearly.
Clearly. Well, I'm sure they're glad that they encouraged you.
I think so.
So, you know, you've spent a lot of time in the restaurant industry in Atlanta already, and we're definitely going to talk about Watershed in a moment. But one thing I did want to ask you about, it seems to me, and we've had a great experience with it because we're sponsors year-round of Share Our Strength.
Mm-hmm.
The restaurant community here in Atlanta, I've never seen this anywhere else, where there is such a rally around charitable and philanthropy in the industry. Are you involved with Share Our Strength or the Giving Kitchen or any of the other charitable endeavors?
Yes,
here?
Yes, yes.
All?
Yes and yes.
Wow.
And I don't know about other cities. I can't speak for other cities, but I know this. When I started working in Atlanta, when I was a sous chef coming up through, the picture was painted very clearly for me that that's part of the job. It's not something really that it's non-negotiable. We're in the restaurant business. We help out. We give to charity. We give back. And you accept that. And it's great because it gives you, it plants you in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we're just people who cook food. And
right.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but we should be doing a little something more with our talents, I think.
Yes. And I love the connection to the Atlanta Community Food Bank.
Absolutely.
It's just, you know, Bill Bowling's a great guy. We've had him on the show, and we also recently had him as a speaker at Buckhead Business Association as well, talking about the community and what the restaurants in the community do and what the local Buckhead community does as a whole to help support the food bank. And it is just amazing to us. We remembered hearing some of the stats when he was on the show, the volume of food that they take in and provide, and the restaurants donating food at the end of the day and the night and the week when things are done, and there's still a great place where it can go when it's done.
Yeah, it's a situation where everybody can do their part. Nobody can do it all, but
right.
Everybody can do something.
Right. And I have not seen it like this anywhere else. I've, you know, lived in other cities and, you know, grew up in Rhode Island and you know, Providence has a pretty strong restaurant community, but I don't recall ever seeing this kind of level of interest and integration of all the restaurants. So
yeah, it's really
kudos.
Cool. It's a really cool thing to be involved with.
Kudos. It sure
Thanks.
Is. And I get to go to a lot of those fun events. So.
And they're fun, aren't they?
Oh my goodness. So much fun.
They're a good time.
So much fun. I have a great time. I have a great time with those. Well, let's talk about Watershed. How long have you been at Watershed?
I started Watershed in the middle of January. So
wow.
10 weeks. Just, is that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So lots of acclimating going on.
We're pretty well acclimated by this point. I get in there, roll my sleeves up, and get comfy.
Okay. Well, we had one of your owners in our publication, our current issue, right? We have Indigo Girls in our issue. So you must have some fun working with the owners and then getting to create on your own. What kind of changes are you bringing to the menus?
The menu changes, it's been a lot of fun, first of all. And I can't say enough good about the people who own Watershed. And Emily Saliers is, she's fantastic. It's been a lot of fun working at Watershed and kind of putting my stamp on it. And what I like to do is kind of the same as some chefs like to do, a little bit different than others, but I really like to have a market-driven restaurant and have things dictated by literally what's walking in the back door. It's very spontaneous. Sometimes it's a little maddening, but it's always fun. It's always creating an environment where my staff is learning the whole time. So we've got, we've got new ingredients coming in every day that some of my cooks have never worked with. Some of the servers have never served before, even heard of. And I get to go out there and be the teacher and be an educator and teach them how to work with it, teach them what it is, get them to try new things. They get excited. And it's really electric. It's super cool.
So I'm assuming that you're using a lot of things from local farms.
Oh,
and you're going to them for the first time on behalf of Watershed, right?
Some of those places they've never used before? This restaurant has a very long history of supporting the local community and working with the local growers and the local farmers. That predates my involvement with the restaurant. Then again, I have a lot of farmers that I work with that I really like that they haven't worked with before and vice versa. So it just makes the bubble even bigger and keeps it stronger, frankly.
So with the menu, what is the style of the menu? What would you consider the menu format?
The menu format, I guess if we had to put descriptors on it, I would call it New Southern. And that's a little different than Old Southern. But the number one priority is that we're sourcing ingredients from this region and that we're treating them with respect. We're making them last. We're giving them the honor, frankly, that they deserve. So you won't find me importing asparagus from France or mushrooms from the Northwest. Even though they're great ingredients, I want to do my best to really honor the tradition of the food of the South.
So I love hearing this when people say it. Tell us some of the farms and the items that you get from them. Like, I hear people talking about the Benton Farms bacon.
Oh, let's see.
I've had that before.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is amazing.
It's very... What's the word I'm looking for? It's very distinct, would be a good way to put it. We buy an awful lot of produce from Woodland Gardens in Athens, and that is in response to what they've got. Been getting just beautiful, beautiful produce from them. Turnips, carrots, baby greens, things like arugula that are really in season right now, and they're always beautiful. They're always pristine. I get two middles of pork every week from Tommy Searcy at Gum Creek Farms. Gosh, I get cheese from Manyfold Farms. I get vegetables from Burge Organics. I get from McMullen Farms. I buy chickens from Grassroots Farms. I could go on and on and on and on.
No, these are great. It's great to hear that. What else? What's in season right now?
We're at an interesting point in the year because even though it looks like spring outside, most of the spring produce has really not started erupting yet.
I'm from Rhode Island, so they don't normally see that till like June.
Do they have spring in Rhode Island?
Sometimes not, right, Chris? Sometimes, because you're from Boston, so sometimes it goes from like winter to summer, and June can be just as cold as the March and April. I don't miss it.
No, I can see why not.
I miss the family and friends, but I don't miss the weather.
It's really nice here.
Super nice.
As a northerner myself, a native northerner.
What part?
I come from northern Indiana.
Okay. So you get it.
Oh, yeah. The Chicago area. We get real cold up there. What we're seeing on the market right now, a lot of the early spring roots, so radishes, turnips, baby carrots are coming in strong. We're still seeing a lot of greens, soft winter lettuces. Kale, collards are kind of on the way out. Still seeing some kohlrabi, starting to see early fennel. And now we're starting to see some of the spring botanicals, spring flowers, and some of the early pea shoots and some very, very early shell peas from the southern part of the state. Oh, we're getting spring onions from South Georgia now, too.
Oh, yum.
So that's pretty exciting. We're all keeping our fingers crossed for strawberries, though.
Okay, that's my favorite. Strawberries and peaches.
There you go.
Totally. Where do you see the Atlanta food scene going? Because you're a part of it.
Yeah.
What's your opinion?
So if I look at it, you know, 10 years ago, and then compare that to where it is today and kind of extrapolate that out, it's going to get really exciting. It's in the grand scheme of things, Atlanta still has a newer food scene than some of our other more well-established cities. New York, of course, Los Angeles, some would argue Chicago. So Atlanta still has a little bit of growing to do and kind of finding and solidifying its identity as more than just the fried chicken capital of the world. This is a really exciting time to be a chef in this city. There are more really, truly talented chefs in this city than I can even think of. I feel very fortunate to have a group of colleagues in this town who are not just people who cook food and replicate dishes, but real visionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what excites me when I think about the food scene in Atlanta and where it's heading. It's acquiring this level of vision that's a really cool thing to be a part of, and really becoming its own cuisine, really the cuisine of Atlanta, as opposed to a mishmash of other things. I think it's really taking on its own identity. It's going to continue to open up. It's going to continue to spread out. And we're seeing a lot of that. Now some of our best operators are starting to open restaurants out in the suburbs, mm-hmm. which 10 years ago nobody would have done. But they're extending the community out further and further. And it's really cool.
Good for all of us, right?
It's good for everybody.
Lots of great options. You know, we sometimes will talk about other folks that have been on the show. And one of the things that got a lot of us when Steve DeFilippo from Davio's was on the show, and mm-hmm. he commented that somebody, you know, a lot of people ask him like, Gia, why do you want to open there? There's already so many restaurants there. And he says it's great for business because it gives people options and they try things and then they want to try other things because there's so much to choose from. So it encourages people to dine out.
It sure does.
I think it's a great philosophy. He says there's plenty to go around. And mm-hmm. it sounds like from your words that you're saying the same thing.
It's totally true. I want everybody to be successful. I mm-hmm. want the restaurants on our block to kill it because when they're successful, we're successful
right.
too.
Right. Brings other people to the neighborhood for sure.
And it's good for the restaurant community as a whole and keeps the nation's eyes on Atlanta mm-hmm. as a food destination. And that's a really important thing for us.
Yes. We need people coming. A lot going on here. Yeah. Between the food and the shopping and just the boom in general here, especially in Buckhead. It's amazing. We talk about it a lot. It's great for business. People complained to Sam Macell about the traffic, and his canned answer is, why are you complaining? It means we're doing a great job of building our community. And I've heard him say that for 5 years, as long as I've known him. So.
Well, the resurgence here in Buckhead has been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really, a really cool thing to watch.
Yeah. Well, now you're a part of it.
I know. How weird. How much fun is that?
So let's go back to your menu. I have one big question on your menu now, because I know you've made some tweaks.
I have.
Doing lots of new things. What's your favorite dish on your menu?
Is that hard to ask a chef? It's the question that...
And don't say fried chicken, because I know you guys serve fried chicken.
Oh, we do, and it's really good. I would say right now, and this could all change tomorrow.
Of course.
Because that's how chefs are.
We're asking you for, like, right now, what's the dish that has you know, really excited?
I'm really excited about Appalachian cider beans, which is something... I don't know if anybody at this table has ever
heard of
them.
No.
I've been focusing a lot of my research lately on the foods and preparations of the Appalachian region of the South. Really, really fascinating. And I could go on ad infinitum about it. But there's this one dish that struck me called cider beans. And it's really, really common. And they serve it in gas stations even. And it's kind of the Appalachian version of baked beans. So dried beans that are cooked in apple cider and then seasoned with molasses and mustard and salt pork, and then baked with onions. Now, I serve mine a little bit differently. I serve mine with a soft-cooked egg and then breadcrumbs that I fried in chicken fat.
Oh.
And it's really good. That's so good. It'll give you a moment where you're just like, oh. Like, it's a good enough dish that I actually look at it and I'm like, I didn't make this. Like, somebody else is better than I did made this dish.
Wow. I'm not sure about the breadcrumbs and the fat part.
You should be sure. Yeah. You're going to want to take my word for it.
We'll try it because of you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Try it because of you, for sure.
Don't be afraid.
So we're talking about Southern food. Mm-hmm. How about Southern food in general? Where do you see Southern food going? Because you said it's new Southern food you're doing.
Yeah.
So the ingredients are changing and evolving. And
the ingredients are changing and evolving. Some of the preparations, though, should be anchored in tradition. Mm-hmm. And I think that, to me, is the real face of new Southern cuisine, is knowing where the balance is between doing something completely creative and completely separate from tradition, but also having the discernment to know when to replicate the dish exactly. I am fortunate enough at home to have a copy of Mrs. Hill's New South Cookbook. I believe my copy was printed in 1872.
Wow.
And it's a very, very special book, but I find myself sometimes looking back. Even yesterday, I was looking for a recipe how to make yeast with fresh hops to make yeast-raised pancakes. So there's some history involved there and some honor of that. And that's kind of where I see Southern cuisine at and continuing to go, is this great balance between tradition and modern artistry, modern ingredients, modern techniques.
That is so totally ambitious, because I would never take the time to make pancakes with yeast that I have made myself.
I make my own
that's
cheese.
Fantastic.
It's all sorts
fantastic.
Of things.
Well, that's what chefs do. You're creative, so... Mm-hmm. Love that creativity. Okay, so tell our listeners how they can find you. Where's the restaurant located? The address, all the social media handles, anything that we need to find out where Watershed is.
Watershed's really easy to find. Say 1820 Peachtree Road. That's essentially Peachtree and Palisades, or Peachtree and 28th Street.
Okay. It's across from Brookwood, right?
It's in the Brookwood.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's in the Brookwood and across from the Brookwood shopping area, I think. Isn't that what they call that?
Is that what they call that?
I don't know.
Well, at any rate, we're on the web at watershedrestaurant.com, and then you can find us on Twitter at watershedatl.com.
Instagram?
Instagram at watershedatl.com.
Fantastic.
Or, excuse me, there's no .com on an Instagram handle.
At. Did I say at?
I know. I just get carried away.
Well, it's great to have you on, Zeb. Really appreciate your time, and
thanks,
good luck to
much.
You at Watershed. We're very much looking forward to dining there.
Thanks.
Appreciate having you today. So we're moving on to Camille Kessler, and very excited to talk to Camille. I believe that our friend Danielle Rollins, who was on here, is involved in this project.
She is. She's one of our fabulous designers. Mm-hmm.
And she is an Instagram specialist. I see her on there all day long posting pictures of the project as it's coming along. And
yes.
We're very excited to talk to you about this year's show house.
Thank you.
So first of all, tell us about the mission of the Atlanta Symphony Associates and its direct correlation to the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra.
Absolutely. The Atlanta Symphony Associates, the ASA, is the volunteer and fundraising arm of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra. So our primary focus is on fundraising and volunteering in support of the orchestra.
Okay. And you are the president of the Atlanta Symphony Associates. Is that a term that is an elected term, and there's a group of folks that are meeting on a regular basis, or is this something you volunteer to take on?
It's an elected term. I am a volunteer, but I am president of the ASA for 2 years, and in that capacity, I chair the board of directors for the Atlanta Symphony Associates, and I sit on the board of directors for the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra and the Woodruff Arts Center Board of Trustees.
Fantastic. So this is actually a fundraiser.
It is a fundraiser, yes.
It's a big fundraiser. Is this the biggest of the year?
It is. It is. This is our signature fundraiser for the symphony, and it takes 2,000 volunteers to put this on. I'm not supposed to be chairing it, but I am, and I'm thrilled to do so. But it's literally become our signature fundraiser in support of the Symphony Orchestra.
So tell us about the Decorator Show House and Gardens. Like, how did this start? And what exactly is it, this project?
Sure. It started in 1970. So this year is a milestone for us. It's our 45th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And 45 consecutive years. So we're one of the longest running show homes in the United States, and we're the largest event of its kind in the entire Southeast. So it got started in 1970 as a fun way to raise money for the symphony. And during those early days, it raised about $30,000, which back then was a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Woohoo! Not so much today. So we have much loftier goals. But this now has become our signature project, and it becomes our focus for the year. We start planning for this in July, And it comes to fruition every spring. And so we have a couple of months in between to take a breather and see how we've done, and then we get started again.
So how do you choose the home?
Oh, my goodness. The home chooses us. No.
Okay.
we are always looking for a fabulous house in Buckhead. Typically towards the center of Buckhead is kind of our where we start, and then we fan out. I looked at 35 houses before we selected the house that we are in now. And there's a long list of criteria that we look at. It's not at all interesting or exciting, but once you find the one, you know, and you kind of feel like it has chosen you. So the current house that we have chosen, we actually named Chateau Soleil. And the moment you see it, you'll know why. It's yellow. And in fact, the inside of the house was also yellow.
You said was.
So the way the project works is we find this fabulous house and we get a group of amazing designers who come in and completely transform a huge estate and make it into something amazing. And it becomes almost like an artist when you were talking about, you know, the art, culinary art. Well, this is, and the symphony is symphonic arts. Well, this is, you know, the art of design, and people want to see it. They want to get inspiration for their own homes, as well as just to see what these amazing designers have been able to create from really a blank canvas. So it is no longer yellow. It's we're lovingly calling it the 50 Shades of Gray house because there's a lot of gray inside, but it's gorgeous. And it was not planned, but it's gorgeous.
So when you come in with the designers, what gets redesigned? Not just the color on the walls, I'm sure.
Everything.
So the homeowners, they must absolutely have to be willing to have their furnishings moved and replaced.
Yes, we try to look for homes most years that are vacant. So okay. They might be on the market. This particular home is on the market and is owned by a corporation. But there have been years in the past where someone just vacates the premises for us to host this three-week fundraiser. But they have to take everything out, and they have to be willing and open to having some significant changes occurring in the house. So whether it's a kitchen renovation or, for example, in this current house, one of the bathrooms, the designer just completely gutted the bathroom and has put in an entire new bathroom in the house. So we do ask the homeowner, do you like this? Are you okay with this? And get their stamp of approval. But we try to give the designers wide berth on you know, putting their thoughts into creation.
Well, we have lots more questions about this. First of all, when does this year's event take place? When does it start?
It begins April 18th, Saturday, April 18th, and it runs through Mother's Day on May 10th.
Okay. And how do people attend? What kind of events go on during the show house?
You can buy tickets. There's a number of retailers around the city that you can get advance tickets at, so you don't have to wait in line. You can also wait in line at the show house and get tickets at our ticket booth, and all of the information is on decoratorsshowhouse.org. And it lists, you know, whether it's Boxwoods or ADAC, America Smart, there's a lot of retailers that sell tickets for us. And we also have a host of special events that go on throughout the run of the show. So, for example, our honorary chair this year is celebrity designer Vern Yip of HGTV. Mm-hmm. He also writes a column for the Washington Post, and in fact, he's flying back into Atlanta from Asia right now. He was doing a story for them there, so he's going to race back here and finish his space in time for us to open. So he's actually going to hold a meet and greet at the house one day. We also have another HGTV designer named Chip Wade, who is going to host a meet and greet. And he just did a show with Ellen DeGeneres.
I was going to say, I recognize the name.
Yes, and he's a Georgia Tech grad. I'm not going to hold it against him. Go Dogs. but he's just a fabulous guy, and Vern really likes him. And so we're so thrilled to have both of them involved. And we also have, for the first time ever, we have a design school involved. So we've got 20 design students from the Art Institute of Atlanta who are designing one room in the house, and they're going to staff that room. So when people come and walk through the house, not only will they be able to see this room that these students designed, but they'll be able to meet some of the students as well.
So the students each have a room?
No, they have,
one room together.
One room that they are having, and it's become kind of their class project. So they're figuring, I don't know what they're going to put in the room, but I did pop by there on the way here, and the walls are, they've painted the walls, they've painted the ceiling, they've painted the floor.
Wow.
So it'll be interesting.
Wow. It's tough. Zeb, when you put that many creative people in one room, it must be difficult. Everyone's got their own opinion.
Oh, it can get a little weird.
Hopefully the students aren't killing each other before the end of this project. So the home is here in Buckhead. Where is it? Are you allowed to say where it is?
Of course. We want people to come. It's at 4701 Northside Drive. 4701 Northside Drive. I also want to mention, you know, there are other events that go on. I mean, we've got yoga on the lawn. We've got the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra is going to perform 3 concerts at the house. So if you have a ticket and you come in that day, these are complimentary things that occur at the house while you happen to be there. We have a makeover team coming one day. I mean, just so many fun things, as well as seeing the work of these amazing designers, such as the Daniel Rollins that you mentioned,
right,
and so many other fabulous folks.
So just logistically, the home, if what happens when you have like 200 cars showing up, I'm assuming there might be some sort of transportation back and forth from destinations?
Yes, we'd love to have 200 people come, but not park at the house. Thanks
right
for mentioning that. I don't think we endeavor to be a good neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
So parking is off-site, and the parking location, I don't have memorized, but it's over by SunTrust, over by the Atlanta Speech School on Northside Parkway. And so they have there'll be shuttle buses. The Forum and Medici buildings have just graciously, this is their third year of allowing us to park there for free, and we validate the parking. And then we have a shuttle service that will take attendees to and from the house.
So how much are the tickets for these events?
The tickets to tour the house are $30. And if any of the special events that we have going on at the house, they are all complimentary. As long as you have a ticket, you can come in.
Wow, that seems very reasonable for all that entertainment.
I like to think so.
Totally. How much money do you folks raise?
We have raised over $6 million for this project over the course of its inception. And so this year, our goal is to raise $300,000 to benefit, and that's net. To net $300,000 in support of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, which, of course, as you know, needs it and deserves our support. They are such an amazing
organization. I was just going to ask
that.
Where do the funds go? I know the Symphony Orchestra does some great programs.
They do.
Anything specifically that you raise the money for?
We do. It's specifically in support of their community outreach and education initiatives. So one of the things that the ASA does is we also have volunteers that go out with the symphony where they go all throughout the Metro Atlanta and perform for children, you know, some as far out as you know, Lassiter High School. I mean, all the way out Marietta and beyond, all throughout Metro Atlanta, as a way to broaden children's horizons and let them, you know, hear symphonic music for the first time. So a lot of what we do in this project is to provide funding so that the symphony can continue those outreach endeavors. And it's amazing when you see a child hearing this kind of music for the first time, or when you have an instrument petting zoo and a child, you know, blows a horn and he hears a sound, just to see their face light up. It's you don't forget it. I have 3 small children, and I took them, all girls. Woohoo. And I took them
Chris, girl after your heart.
Yes. May I say, though, do be careful when you put an instrument in the child's hands. Be prepared.
We are very careful.
Yeah,
prepared. Yes, we are prepared.
We live the life now. I have a cellist
and
I have a trumpet player in our midst.
That's fabulous.
Most days.
There are
practice days.
There
are practice days when it's not quite as fabulous.
Earplugs.
Well, I have boys, and I'm just so glad nobody ever asked to play the drums. My husband played the drums when he was younger, but that was before I met him. I do want to ask about some of the other things that you folks do.
Sure.
Some of the other events that you put on throughout the year, not just the Decorator Show House. I can tell you that back in 2011, one of the first years, it was the first year our magazine was in operation, And we were invited to exclusively photograph a private event in somebody's home that was for the symphony.
Yes.
And it was fundraising for the programs for the children. So we were thrilled to be asked. And
oh, wonderful.
It was a black tie event in a private home, 75 people. So to be able to send our photographer and have those photographs in the magazine was a real thrill for us. And he was super excited. The home was beautiful, and I believe they were playing outdoors.
Yes.
So it was gorgeous. But what other types of events are you putting on throughout the
year? Well, we do a fall party where it's, and all of these, are, there's a fundraising component, obviously, but we have a fall party at a private home, and that sounds just like what you just described. And we bring as many people as we can to introduce them to the organization and try to get them involved. We also have help out with the symphony's golf tournament that they do each year, as well as the gala that they do. So that they basically have three fundraising events, and then, of course, they have other means of fundraising through corporate philanthropy and support. So we do a spring luncheon every year in conjunction with our new leadership coming on board. But everything that we do is a way to get people on board, teach them about the organization, and get them involved in our show house. Because, again, it is people intensive. It does require a lot of folks. But the moment people learn about it and find out what we do, we have people who've been involved in this project for decades because they love it so much. And it does take up a lot of time. But the rewards when you see that house finished and you see people come through it and you see how much we're able to raise for the symphony, it all becomes worthwhile.
Absolutely. You know, I've said this my whole time living in Atlanta. I moved here 5.5 years ago, and it is amazing to have sports, music, symphony, theater, all kinds of theater in one place where you don't have to travel an hour or 3 hours away to do it all. And I think sometimes people take advantage or just totally don't recognize that this is here, and they don't take advantage enough of what is right at our fingertips. Dining, the shopping, everything all at once. And when people come and visit me here, they say, I can't believe you have all this here. And that's because I come from a place where we don't have it all handily available. So me personally, I appreciate it so much. Just, you know, on any given night, you could be at anything that you're interested in culturally. And this is a wonderful, wonderful organization. Is there anything else we need to know about the show house? We do know where it is located.
Yes.
We know about transportation. I knew that would be an important question. And, you know, how do people get involved with you? How do they find you or reach out to you personally to get involved?
Sure. Thank you. They could check out the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra website, which is atlantasymphony.org. And if you go to the support page, you will find my mugshot, just kidding, my picture and information.
I saw your mugshot on Twitter today.
You will find out how to reach us, and we are always looking for new volunteers and supporters. The last thing I would say about the show house is we do have a grand opening. And this year it's a little special. It's going to be on April 17th, and this is our celebration of not just the grand opening of Chateau Soleil, our 45th anniversary show house, but also to recognize that we've had 44 prior years of stellar show homes and all of the wonderful designers that have been involved. We are asking all of them to come back and share in this, and we will have Vern Yip there, and who we will introduce him to everyone who has purchased a ticket. Those tickets are just $150. And it's cocktail attire, and we have a silent auction and some fabulous items in the silent auction. My father-in-law was able to get two club passes, week-long club passes to the FedEx, what do you call it? The Tour Championship.
Yes, the PGA Tour Championship.
Yes, at East Lake. So two week-long club-level passes. So I'm going to bid on those myself. And Tesla... which has
are they
a
giving
new store.
A car?
I asked them for a car and they declined. But
they gave you use of the charging stations.
Well, they're going to give us use of two cars and I asked them for a week, but they were worried that people would be worried driving on the highway that their battery was going to die. But you, they're going to have a car there, and you can kind of sit in it and see if you like it, and then bid on driving a Tesla. So how cool is that?
That's very cool. It's a great marketing tool. They'll go out and sell a car or two after that,
yes,
I'm sure.
I hope they do.
Me too. Well, Camille, how else can we learn about you? I know that there's a lot of Twitter handles, Instagram, Facebook. Can you kind of go down the list and let our audience
sure.
know exactly
it's
how to find you?
Sure, it's very easy. Our fabulous PR chair, Melissa Hudson, told me just to say, tag us at ASO Showhouse. So that's the easiest way to remember, ASO Showhouse.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate you being here. Very excited about this year's house. I know my editor-in-chief is planning to attend. I think there's a special showing on the 16th for media.
There is, Media Day.
Yes, so we will be there at Media Day. Very excited about seeing the home. And now that I know that it's gone from yellow to gray, I'll be looking at it differently.
Thank you so much.
So thank you for being with us today. Really appreciate it. So our last guest today is Chris Domino. And Chris, very exciting to have you on. I know you were a last minute addition. I'm so glad I was able to get you with us today. We've talked about having you on before. And
yes,
your life can be busy and crazy, just like all of us with our kids and our schedules and our shows. And you've got an early morning show. So we got you out late in the day.
Well, yeah, kind of. No, actually, the good news is I've never been a napper. Like, I've never been that, the day goes away and then you get up and you try to figure out where you are, and I've never really experienced any of that. Now I'm getting to the point age-wise where it's starting to become, I'm thinking about it.
The power nap thing, the five-minute thing, I could never get it because I can't fall asleep, first of all, in the middle of the day while it's still light out. So even if the room is pitch black, I cannot fall asleep. So
yeah,
I don't get that either. I've never been a nap person.
Smart or dumb, it just hasn't been part of the existence just yet. We'll find out. I will admit to this. There have been a couple of moments when you're at a red light and all of a sudden you have that moment where you're just shaking. You go, I think I just fell asleep. I think I actually just fell asleep.
I've had that happen.
You get on with the rest of your day. And the Braves are opening up, obviously, come next week. So life gets a little bit sort of, the day gets a little bit bookended.
Yeah. So your gig right now, you're 6 to 9 a.m.
Yes. So it's 4:05, alarm goes off, out of bed pretty quickly. I've never been a snooze guy. I honestly, less than the fingers on my hand where I've actually hit a snooze button ever. It goes off, I get up, I think that helps. And then you just basically get the day started. Live fairly close to the studio. The good news is it's radio. That's sweatshirt, sweatpants.
Yes.
Pair of jeans, whatever it takes to get out the door as quickly as possible.
Yeah, the only reason I can't wear sweatpants or jeans here is because these two guys running the show are taking pictures. So, you know, I can't do that.
My kids actually call the shirt I have on now because it has buttons. It's called an adult shirt. Daddy must be going someplace because he has an adult shirt on. It also has sleeves. There were many days where I did radio without sleeves. I'm not proud, and those pictures are floating around. But there were many days on remotes in Buckhead, the
oh,
old
no.
version of Buckhead.
We would never pull those up on you. Ryan, off limits, okay?
Yeah.
So let's ask you a few questions about your career. Because
sure.
You mentioned you're not a Cornell grad, and I'm not either. So
no.
Did you go to school for broadcasting journalism?
I did not. I've actually been asked to speak a couple of... I've done Career Day from elementary school through high school through college, media departments and communications departments. I've also been asked by a couple of the companies that actually have broadcasting schools, which come in, and I say, I'm the last guy you want coming in, because I was a bartender, and that's the guy who hired me said, I'm hiring a bartender. And if you ever stop becoming a bartender, you might as well just pack it up and go away.
Well,
so,
you know
no,
how to
it
talk.
Not.
It's a gift to be able to talk intelligently.
Happy hours. I mean, and listen, when you grow up in an Italian house and you grow up trying to get to the adult table at Thanksgiving, you better have a little bit of something. And, you know, the quicker you got to the adult table, the minute that Uncle Nicky or Uncle Frank said, look, you're smart enough, you have something going on where you can actually go from that table to this table, that's the Italian version of a bar mitzvah. I mean, you become a man on the day when somebody actually says you're at the adult table, and then you're invited back the next year. You can blow it. It's a lot like being sent down to the minor leagues. But staying at the adult table is actually the goal of every sort of red-blooded, who's the guy, the patriarch, who actually determines whether you get to or not.
So how'd you get into radio?
I was a caller 21 years ago. I moved here in July of 93. 680 The Fan had actually just started as a sports talk station. And to amuse myself, I didn't really figure out Atlanta. I knew I wanted to come here. I went to chiropractic school. That's what got me down. And I had a buddy who went to Davenport, Iowa. And I was 30 years old at the time, turning 31. And I said, well, I'm not going to Davenport, Iowa. If I'm going to do this, I went back to Rutgers at 29 and change. But I'm not going to Davenport. And then I stumbled upon Atlanta. And I was here for about 8 hours. They said, oh, I can go there.
Yes.
And I came down here.
I did the same thing. I was like, first time I came here, I said, oh, I can see the writing on this wall.
Yeah. About 8 hours in, I said, well, this is kind of phenomenal. There's good news and bad news in that. When you invite your friends down and you end up kicking them out, saying, if you want to live here, come live here. But you got to get out of my place because people want to stay. The men to women ratio was phenomenal. The bar ratio on Buckhead, phenomenal. There were so many things going on in the early to mid 90s.
We've done Buckhead nightlife then and now.
Yeah. So I was a caller. I actually, to amuse myself, because I lived in Norcross, was going to school in Marietta, and I hadn't figured out the traffic thing. Even in 1993 and 94, it wasn't phenomenal. And I would call a certain show just to amuse myself. And there was a day when they said, there's a new program director from Philadelphia. He's looking for something. I'm not sure what it is, but it might be you. And then from then on, the strangest part is this is a top 10 market. Like I kind of knew that just by size. I get it. 21 years later, I really don't understand it other than how many people live here, determine a market, and then you get a number slapped on, you can move a little bit. But I've met guys who went to Syracuse and Georgia and other communication schools and got their really fancy, legitimately big-time degrees, and they're not working anywhere near a microphone.
Right.
So this was very flukish. And all I'm trying to do is keep my head low enough that nobody actually says, by the way, you're done.
No, you do a great job. Okay. And your sports knowledge, obviously, is superb. It's what you do, 680 The Fan.
Yes.
So you've ended up in exactly probably where you wanted to be, passionate about, love the work, and love the genre.
It's unbelievable. You know, everybody who says they love their job, listen, there are days. I'm not digging ditches, and I get that. But there are days where you just go, oh, goodness, today it feels a little bit more like work. Mm. It's a job, and you have to work it like a job, but I've got 99.9% of the world beat. My buddies and I, if we went to games, we were three rows from the top. The first couple of times they came to Atlanta, when I said, no, boys, today we take a left turn. We're going closer to where the guys were actually playing or doing their job instead of turning right and going up. It is phenomenal. We call them cake days in our house. If something good happens, it's a cake day. When I get my credentials 21 years later, those are cake days. I bring them home. I slap them on the table. I said, Hawks games, Braves games, been to Super Bowls, Final Fours. It's unbelievable that an idiot from New Jersey actually gets an opportunity to I don't want to say I have the keys to the building, but it's about the next best thing to having the keys to the building.
Well, it's access. You have access to things. I say this all the time. Again, being from Rhode Island, you know, you would never have this kind of access to, have friends who are athletes and actors and musicians and just all kinds of interesting people that wouldn't be in your world because it's just not part of that city.
And what I found, too, is that people have stories to tell. I mean, everybody has a story to tell. But if you hone in on what it is you're interested in, I've spoken to people who played literally in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And when you pick up a phone and you ask them to tell their story, it's really incredible how people want to. Now, some are better at it than others, but to be able to talk to people who actually were there, made history, witnessed history, and made history. I'll just give you a quick one. In 1995, I put a list together of the 100 people. I did a show on WSB. And it was before the Bob Costas show. And I always loved the interview format, long form interview. So I made a list of 100 people I'd like to speak to, just 100 people, and let my mind, let my imagination go crazy. And I ended up speaking to 88 of them. And I mean, Sir Edmund Hillary, John Glenn, Jim Lovell, the astronaut. I just went as far reaching as I could. Chuck Yeager, which was phenomenal. But again, the idea.
It's like a bucket list.
and it's one of those, again, because they're part of history. I mean, these people witnessed and were part of history. And I just said, their story needs to be told because unfortunately, like a lot of people, whether it's veterans, they're going away, you know, and if it's not told by them, it's going to be somebody else telling it, maybe qualified people, but it's not the same going firsthand,
totally,
which is what I love going to games, love press conferences, love the idea of why something might've happened, maybe why something didn't when it comes to a game. But I really like the historical part of it better than anything else.
I knew I liked you for a reason. I'm a history major, so, you know, ask me how I end up being a publisher of a magazine, sort of a somewhat circuitous route as well.
Yeah,
totally in something I was never intending to be in.
Old soul, I work with guys who absolutely believe that if you look at an old picture of Ebbets Field, you'll see me. It's the reincarnated version. I live in a black and white world, wear the tie, wear the hat to the game. That fascinates me. And a running joke has always been that I've lived a lot. I've lived my past life in a window of that black and white world of before The Wizard of Oz, where anybody said, boom, Gone with the Wind, here's color. there was stuff going on, and people were living in a world where they didn't have as, obviously not social media, but they didn't have as many outlets to tell the stories.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a bygone era. You mm-hmm. feel like you're a, I feel like sometimes like I was born in the wrong era. My fascination is historical as well. So I go back sometimes. I love research.
Yeah, but I will also tell you that I'm a big fan of amenities. Now, it's just I don't need a fancy hotel. I need a bed and a shower, but electricity is really my friend.
Yeah.
Air conditioning is my friend.
Yeah, ask me if I want to go camping. No way. I need the hot shower.
If my family needed me to hunt and gather, as I look over at the
Look
the
over
chef,
at Zeb here.
Yeah, the Domino family would have reached an end very, very quickly. We wouldn't have survived very long in the great outdoors.
Well, let's talk a little bit about sports since it is your genre. What's your favorite sport? Do you have a favorite or do you just love it all?
I do. And I have a favorite child, which was a subject that I know that we talked about. Again, when you ask a chef.
No. He's joking, I'm sure.
No, I'm actually not joking. When you ask a chef what his favorite meal is, I saw the look in his eyes, that look that comes with
horrified.
Don't ask a parent who his favorite child is. Baseball, number one.
Okay.
And that's kind of been documented, I think, if people have listened for any period of time.
Mm-hmm. And I watch your Twitter, so I know. Yes,
yeah. And again, I just think, again, some great storytellers. I'm a big fan of college coaches, where they came from. The fact that a guy might have been a typing teacher and he worked his way up to being Tom Izzo or somebody along those lines. So, yeah, favorite sport, definitely baseball. More emotional investment in baseball than any other sport.
Do you love basketball, though?
I do. You know, I grew up in Staten Island, and then my family made the trek west. I was born in Brooklyn. They built a bridge. We moved to Staten Island. Then Staten Island to New Jersey, which was like the westward ho, get the wagons, we're going to New Jersey, because my mom thought Staten Island was going to sink. So, yeah, I grew up around professional basketball, professional sports. But I've come to grow really to enjoy college. I lost my jersey card. I like Saturdays better than Sundays when it comes to football. And that's a really, like when my friends heard that was a really bad day for me because I was uninvited to a lot of things because it's NFL football by leaps and bounds as opposed to the college game up there. But yeah, baseball would be number one.
I got basketball as my number one, but football's a close second. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. And it kind of depends on what house you grew up in, what it is you heard, what it is that was on the TV. I mean, back in the day when there were only three channels, four and five when you actually got out of the network TV. Anybody listening now from New York, New Jersey, WOR, WPIX, you were a Yankee house, you were a Met house, you were a Knick house, or you were, you know, a Net house, and you had a pick and Rangers and Islanders, and your lines were drawn. I mean, lines were drawn in the sand. This is who we are. That's who that house is. and let it be known that, you know, the mingling might not be...
In the South, they put the flags in front of the yard to let you know.
Yeah. In my old neighborhood, they threw a rock through your window. Just let you know that, hey, you.
So you have a house full of girls, okay? You have teenage girls, right?
No, 11 and 9.
11 and 9. Okay, so teenager.
I have little girl problems still.
Okay.
I'm on the verge.
Your little girls can play with my little girl.
There you go.
I'm on the verge. I have an 11-year-old going on some days 14, and I have a 9-year-old going on 7. So when I said that I have a favorite, I do. I love them the same. I like them differently. And people get really upset because nobody wants to admit that. It's ridiculous. Of course you have a favorite. Who gives you the least amount of grief? And 11 going on 14, those moments, the 9-year-old wins.
Yeah.
I mean, she does.
Well,
she just wins.
I have a 15-year-old boy, so... without going into stories, 15, just think 15.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't want
14, 15, hard, really hard.
You can't make me.
Do your girls like sports?
They do. They're soccer. They play soccer. Now, they didn't play soccer at 3 because this town is a really big soccer town, and I think it's fantastic. But they didn't play at 3. They didn't play at 2 or running around in diapers. The rule in our house was you have to ask to do something twice or else you really don't want to do it. And that included music. I mean, it's easy. I'd like a full head of hair and a wheelbarrow full of cash. You can ask for a lot of things, but, you know, how much do you really want it?
Just ask twice.
Right. So the rule was you have to...
I'll go for that second one. I'll ask twice.
Best about 58 times.
I have a head of hair.
Nothing's come my way in that department. But once they asked twice, then it became, okay, now you really mean it. So soccer players. And it's the best hour plus of my week is watching them play. For everything I get a chance to do, there is nothing better. Practice is good. Games are better. Not because I'm a fanatical parent, but I just like the idea of what I hope they're learning. Get your gear ready. You're responsible for it. I'm not. You can't find a shin guard. That's a you problem. I like some of the lessons that even at this age can be taught.
Absolutely. I like how you think. We're still doing that at 15.
Mm-hmm.
And sports in terms of what you do, do the girls like to accompany you to games? Are they involved at all in what you like to go and see?
Yeah. How much food is being promised to them when we go?
Yeah.
Look, socially, they like crowds. They like noise. They've been going since they were very young. They've had an opportunity to, you know, they've done more at their age than I did before I was 30. Mm-hmm. And that's a fact. That's not a makeup moment. They've done more at their age than I did before mm-hmm. I was 30, before I got into this profession. But they do like it. They like, they'll sit down, they will saddle up on the couch and ask who we're rooting for and why. You know, I kind of like that. I don't want them to have an interest just because. But if I give, it's like my wife, quite honestly. My wife needs a storyline. She needs a storyline. Who are we rooting for and why? Give me something about him and him. And then all of a sudden,
yeah,
it
but
becomes
look who
better.
She's married to. There's a reason why she needs that.
I have three women.
She wants. She's married to the one who does everything with historical data.
Yeah,
I'd be asking for a storyline.
Well, she does believe that I will know at least one thing.
If I'm
watching it, I will know at least one mm-hmm. thing. But the joke in our house is, I live in a house most days, and I leave at 4:10 in the morning. So there's a really good chance I can't blow it. Most days, I leave my house with three women on my side. Like I'm okay with three women. Now, at night, it can be blown. But by the time everybody goes to bed, I wake up and leave the next day with three women actually being really okay with me. And that sort of has become the goal. We joke about that, but it really is sort mm-hmm. of a goal that every day I look around and go, they're okay with me today. I'm okay with them. They're okay with me. Let's get on and we'll see what happens today.
I like that.
I know. Well, it's kind of funny. I tell people all the time, I think it was God's joke on me that I end up in a house full of boys. So I grew up around all boys. I'm the only girl in my whole family all the way around in both, you know, the generation. So don't I end up marrying somebody who has three boys? Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yeah, we call it revenge. When a father has just daughters, it's called revenge.
I thought I had it all figured out, but apparently not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dealing with teenage boys is quite the experience. I mean, we were teenagers once, but wow, I had no idea what these boys put my parents through.
Wow.
Now I get it.
Yeah, my mom raised two boys and a girl, and collectively, the two were easier than the one, and I could absolutely see it. And with all due respect, and I do say this respectfully, my mom didn't know if I was in a good mood for 8 years of my life, because I'd go to school, go to a game, go to practice, and she had no idea if I was in a good mood or not. With my sister, the whole neighborhood knew whether she was in a good mood or
yeah.
not. So yeah, we've one of the things we asked our kids, and it started in pre-K, and I think we were talking about it. Every day that I was able to pick them up, and this job has afforded me a lot of days mm-hmm. to go pick them up.
Yeah, flexibility is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Were you a good friend today? That sort of has started, and it's asked every day, and now they know a little bit as older kids what that actually means.
Mm-hmm.
Were you a good friend today? And that's sort of become the other thing that eventually, if I got a tattoo or if we put something up in the house, if I had somebody come in and paint a little bit of something, that would be the thing probably that would be at the door when you walk in.
So let's talk about the trends of the day here, because
yes.
I know you had a great segment on Bert's show. We love Bert, and I happened to be in my car that morning. I got to hear the whole thing, mm-hmm. and then the next morning I happened to be in the car at the same time,
yeah.
and you were back on talking about social media. So, mm-hmm. of course, we need social media
yes.
in this day and age to run our businesses, to live, to, you know, really interact with our readers, our mm-hmm. listeners, but with the kids, it's such a fine line,
yeah.
and you have to monitor. And I know your girls are younger than even our son, so it's tough to deal with. How do you deal with that?
At its best, social media is an unbelievable thing. To be able to connect with people who you physically can't be with. It's at times better than a phone, but at times a little less personal than that, so try to mm-hmm. figure out the balance between. We monitor, and we've been told to monitor, and we probably got the infamous kick in the pants, which is the reason I was on. My daughter has a phone. It's my phone. It's my wife's phone. You know, we sort of play that. Once they figured out what a library was, we said, okay, do you understand the concept of a library? Yeah, you get a book out. Yeah, and you have to bring it back. Well, everything in the house is mine. It's not yours. It's all on loan like a library, and we have the right to take and hold, and we don't threaten. So we had that moment of let's grab the phone and let's actually find out what is going on here and wipe the brow. All good, but it's again that I don't envy kids in a lot of ways.
No.
I do not envy kids. There's a whole nother level of bullying. Bullying when I was a kid was more about you take a punch, you give a punch, and it's over. This is a whole nother world. And that's the thing we're keeping an eye on more than anything else. My kids know that the disaster of their life will be if we think they're that kid. We have sleepovers at our house. We're monitoring. You know, and I tell my kids, you're being monitored. When you go to somebody else's house, they're assessing you.
Oh, yeah.
And that idea where you're not allowed over to that house anymore, let me just tell you what happened. You failed. and we have a lot of sleepovers. And thank God both have a great set of friends. But this idea of we're keeping an eye on you, and I send you out into the world a lot of days, you're out there more than I have you. The hours are disproportionate. Mm-hmm. You're in the world more than you're with me.
Right.
So we're not perfect, and I admitted that to my kids. We're flying by this. We're one day smarter than you. I promise you, we're one day smarter than you. So let's sort of keep an eye on what's going on with them.
Yeah, it's definitely tenuous, but it sounds like you're doing a great job. Your girls must
Says
be.
You.
Your girls are probably hilarious. I bet they probably both have a great sense of humor.
It is a funny at times household. Yes.
Well, better that there's more laughter than crying.
Yes, that is true too.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Oh, gosh,
it's been a lot
you.
Of fun to have you on, and thrilled that you could fit us into your schedule.
Oh, gosh,
and
thank you.
Go Hawks, right?
Yes.
Go playoff, Hawks. We love
starting,
our Hawks.
Playoffs starting soon. Let's go. This city, I'm tired. Am I allowed to say that the brick wall of crap that's gone on in the city of Atlanta when it comes to sports? It just seems like every other turn, it's one of those one more bricks added to the wall of nonsense, of bad crap that happens in this city. And I'm done with it. I'm tired. I want a parade.
This is exciting. Well, I'm gonna tell you something very exciting as we close here. But we haven't actually made this announcement, but it was definitely announced publicly last week. I was actually asked to sit on the diversity council for the Atlanta Hawks. They've invited 8 outside business leaders to be a part of their newly formed council. And I was asked to be one of those
Good
folks.
For you. Congratulations.
So very, very exciting.
It was Steve Koonin is a man who's going to make sure
that things
get done.
Yeah, I was with Steve last night, and he was very, very complimentary, and looking forward to serving on that committee and seeing what we can do to help the situation and change the landscape. And it's a groundbreaking concept. There are no other teams in the country doing this. So I think we'll see a lot of others follow suit after this. But it's an exciting time for the Hawks. Yep. And as you know, we're huge Hawks fans. And it was also great to see Zaza last night on the court. So we were really enjoying
Good.
That. So thank you so much for being here. Again, all of you, Camille, Zeb, and Chris, any of you guys have questions for each other before we sign off today?
I do have one question for Mr. Domino here.
Yes, sir.
As an upcoming broadcaster and you being a local radio icon and media legend, can you introduce me to David Dickey?
Yes, I could. I will see him at some point either tomorrow or the next day, or if he sees me, it might be a little more difficult. If I sneak up upon him.
Okay.
That's the boss, by the way.
That's
he's
the guy.
The,
yeah.
He's the guy that runs the whole
thing.
The guy I'm trying to get in front of.
Ryan, maybe
so.
You have to hold the door for him to
well,
get the introduction.
What time does he show up to work over there? So maybe
It's actually much earlier than most bosses actually do show up.
I got to get up earlier. Then I thought most radio guys or morning show guys took a nap during the day, and you don't even take that nap to kind of recharge.
I do have a question. That whole concept of I'm not a food guy. I'm not. I'm made fun of. It doesn't interest me quite as much, and people will be angry about the idea that when you tell them food people really are, I would weigh, if I did have an interest in food, I know what I would weigh. And believe me, I'm about 20 over what I should be right now. I can only imagine what the number would be. I'm really asking.
And look how slim he is.
That looks fabulous.
I know.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I meant that as a, this wasn't a setup as to what the hell happened to you. This was good for you because I wouldn't have the self-control.
Well, I have to work for it. I'm an endurance cyclist.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, so I put a lot of miles in on the bike and I just turned 40 last weekend. So I have to... It feels like
Happy
every
birthday.
Day fight a little bit harder.
Yeah, well,
child.
Talk to us when you're 54.
You're a child.
Oh, I get a lot of that.
Well, I will say, because I'm older than you are, and I've had 3 children, and I will tell you, I eat real butter. I eat real sugar.
That's my girl right there.
I don't have any diet product in my house, and it's just, it really is true, all things in moderation.
Absolutely.
Yep.
That's Absolutely.
Processed foods are the enemy.
It's that moderation.
Yeah.
It's that moderation thing.
I make my own bread.
Really?
That's my exercise for the week. Absolutely.
Nice.
Rolling it. I don't use a bread maker. I use my hands.
Oh, that's the way it should be done.
Absolutely.
You have to feel it. It's a tactile task, frankly.
Yes.
Yeah, I just go down the aisle.
Yeah.
I pick it up and I throw it right into the cart. It's
wonderful. You guys were
a
lot of fun today. Thank you again so much
Thanks
for
so
being
much.
With us. We really appreciate it.